I'm Callie Crossley. This is Boston Public Radio. It's been 6 years since Massachusetts passed the Affordable Care Act, but health care costs are rising at an unsustainable rate. My guest, Amy Whitcomb-Slimmer, the Executive Director of Healthcare for All, says the time to tackle the issues of cost and quality is now. Now, Amy, is the new legislation, which was signed into law by Governor Patrick, a powerful tool in containing costs?
It truly is. It will redesign the way we pay for our health care, and it will value the experience that we as patients have within the health care delivery system, which is a new approach. It moves us away from the fee-for-service system that most of us know and moves us into a broader system that actually will pay for better connecting and integrating our care and our providers with one another.
So what do we mean by fee-for-service?
The fee-for-service system means that we pay for every procedure, doctor's visit, test, or operation that's done to the consumer. And in fact, it does nothing about valuing the outcome for that work. So in fact, there are some perverse incentives to do more to us, but not necessarily valuing keeping us healthy, which is what this new system envisions. Being mindful of our overall care and outcomes and making sure that we incentivize keeping us healthy.
And specifically, we're talking about conversations your doctor may have with you not paid for under the old system, email exchanges, because lots of people are talking with their healthcare providers through email, prevention programs that you might be enrolled in, none of that supported by payment by insurance companies, but what was paid for are all the tests and procedures that you've just outlined. So this, is it fair to say, is a paradigm shift of the greatest order, is disruptive as business is using it in a positive way, is a giant leap in sustaining, in trying to contain healthcare costs.
It is wonderfully exciting and offers a revolutionary opportunity for the patients in Massachusetts to not only experience our healthcare system differently, but frankly, to be healthier in the long run because we truly are valuing overall health. If your listeners think about their current experience, their provider often is rushed through an appointment. You know, he or she is paid to see as many patients as is required within the hour, but in fact is not paid to be able to spend time untangling what barriers there may be to your overall health care or what stumbling blocks you may experience in trying to follow their prescription or their advice.
Recently, we had a great conversation about a program that focuses primarily on seniors for home visits and what the doctors were able to uncover in those conversations by being at home. You know, a patient that kept complaining about something, and when he got to the house, he saw what was happening. And then he said, no, don't do this. This is what's causing this reaction. But if it had not been at home, he couldn't have done it. Much better for the seniors. They can stay at home. Much better for the doctor to get an overall holistic view of the patient. Home visits are now going to be paid for.
And isn't that exciting? That truly makes a tremendous difference in being able, as you say, to get a good picture of what barriers there may be to staying well or being able to follow a protocol in the home environment. We will now make allowances to be able to pay for those home visits. We will include opportunities for exchanges by email or by the phone. You know, right now, if your doctor untangles over the phone what it is that may be bothering you or has you sick, keeps you from an emergency room visit, he or she receives no payment for that. In fact, if you find that you have had an accident or you need help after hours, the only option for many people in this fee-for-service system is to go to our emergency room where you have the most expensive care provided to you. And frankly, whatever is done to you there is not necessarily then reflected in your overall health system or in your record. So you may have redundant tests later that are used as follow-ups. So again, there are these peculiar incentives that we want to untangle and better pay for keeping people healthy at home and in the middle of a provider team, which we know will improve our overall health.
So Amy Whitcomb-Slimmer, head of executive director for Healthcare for All, the core of this really works around the primary care physician. I am so fortunate. I have an excellent primary care physician. But we know there is a shortage. And today, the Mass Medical Society released their new survey talking about 51% of internists and 50% of family doctors taking new patients or not taking new patients, and or are taking new patients, and that's a little bit of a teeny improvement over last year when only 49% and 47% of family doctors were accepting new patients. So people, I mean, to take advantage of this, really, you need to have a primary care physician, but we know a lot of them just can't take on new patients. So now what?
It really is a challenge we're going to have to address. We also know that there are shortages geographically across Massachusetts. We think that having a focus on primary care and beginning to value those relationships differently, I mean, frankly, in base terms, primary care docs will be paid more than they currently are, will make that discipline more attractive than it currently is, that eventually there'll be a shift in focus. There is some language in this legislation that includes loan forgiveness. We know that that's had a palpable effect in the number of primary care docs attracted to Massachusetts.
Meaning the law would pick up some of their loans?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes,
right.
Which, again, will be attractive to some and not tenable for others. Mm-hmm. But eventually, we believe that the primary and family practice will become a more attractive specialty for graduating med students.
So this is the second part, as we mentioned, in Massachusetts, the Affordable Care Act in place 6 years ago. We now have 98% of residents covered, and more importantly, 99% of children. Talk to us about the difference in some place like Texas.
Well, you know, we 6 years ago took this on as a challenge. We decided healthcare stakeholders around the state decided we would absolutely have laser focus on getting people access and coverage in the state. So we passed Chapter 58, and you're exactly right. Those statistics are remarkable across the country. We have the highest rate of coverage in the nation. And we are what the Affordable Care Act, President Obama's health care reform bill, is built upon. We hope that the other states across the country will use the example here in Massachusetts and understand that they are actually already paying for the uninsured higher prices than they would be paying if they provided them coverage like we have in Massachusetts. One of the lessons learned is that actually you can keep people healthier by making sure they have insurance than waiting until they have acute episodes and have to present in emergency rooms as uncompensated or uncovered, uninsured individuals.
And I want to emphasize, not only do those statistics, you know, startlingly good, but it also should be noted that I remember a survey a couple of years ago among the healthcare providers and doctors, and they said, wow, I had a little bit of skepticism about how this was going to work, meaning the Affordable Care Act here in Massachusetts. And most of them said it's been entirely successful. You know, that's pretty important.
It truly is. And I will say Healthcare for All had skepticism. We were desperately concerned about the use of the individual mandate requiring us to buy coverage, but decided we would stay at the table and look at this in the guise of shared responsibility. We as individuals appreciate that we are required to be insured in the state of Massachusetts. The state of Massachusetts, their responsibility, the government's responsibility, is to make sure that the coverage is affordable. And payers and providers have to be responsible for making sure what we buy is meaningful to us. So the law that was passed and signed into effect on Monday really takes us to the next step, which is not just that we have meaningful benefits, but the way we have our health care delivered, the way we receive it, puts patients at the center. It's a very exciting advancement.
I'm speaking with Amy Whitcomb-Slimmer. She's the executive director of Healthcare for All, and we're talking about the health care legislation signed into law by Governor Patrick, which is focused on containing costs by elevating prevention. And Governor Patrick's words were, "We crack the code." He's very excited about this. So, some are predicting this will save the state $200 billion in 15 years. You know, in terms of time, 15 years is nothing. So that's a lot of money in 15 years. Are you on board with that? You think that sounds reasonable?
I need him to be exactly right about that. Think about the investment that we can make in the rest of the state. For consumer advocates, what that means is fewer out-of-pocket expenses, overall health improvement. We're very excited in what this will mean for people's standard of living. One of the provisions in the bill that, again, is first in the nation is an investment in proven public health initiatives. So we have a health and wellness trust fund that's going to be established for 4 years with a money, I believe it'll be about $60 million available around the state for programs that will help improve community and population-based health.
I thought this is very, you've written about this, I thought this was really interesting, and the emphasis is on data has to be available to demonstrate that these community-based programs work. In other words, you can't say, I have a program and I think it's helping people. You know, you got to really have some data to back it up that it has an impact on the community. So that is forward thinking to identify these healthcare initiatives, because we have heard so many times and we see these small programs and we say, why can't that be replicated in other places? But often there's no data, but this time there's data. Now, I did want to talk to you about something you've written about, and I thought, is this a little blue sky thinking? There is going to be a governing body to oversee this whole plan and how we put some pieces of this together. And what you have urged, in fact, you have said it's vital that the members of this governing body be free of conflict. Now, we've just finished a conversation talking about pharmaceutical companies having a benefit from a prescription coupon, a coupon for prescription drugs. How can we make certain that this body is comprised of people who are not connected in any way that it's a conflict about really saving money in this way?
Kelly, it's such a very important question, and I do write about how important this is as a foundation for our success, our long-term success, as we change the healthcare delivery system. The legislation actually is very detailed about who gets to choose the members of this commission.
And who gets to choose?
The governor okay. has a couple of people. The attorney general has a couple. One of the seats is reserved specifically for a consumer. And, you know, we're pretty sophisticated at doing conflicts checks. Folks will have to be able to survive a conflict check. And the thinking is that this will mirror the lack of bias that is demonstrated by our health connector. Mm. Again, our health connector sets the standard for the exchanges in the other 49 states across the country. Those folks who make those decisions for the connector are unbiased. They're able to look at the data that's represented and make good, solid decisions. And frankly, they deserve some of the credit for the coverage rates that we've achieved here in Massachusetts.
Well, I raise that because, of course, at the same time all of this has been happening, we're looking at gambling coming into Massachusetts. And you know, everybody is talking about how the legislators overturned the rule that would have made it, you know, impossible for one of them who one of the people who voted on all of the gambling stuff to be a part of a gambling commission or any other gambling related venture in which they might make money, and said, of course, it's not a conflict. Yeah, right. So, you know, I read that and I thought, yeah, how is this going to be different?
It truly is distinctly prescribed within the legislation. And I so appreciate that example. I mean, we know that it does affect your paycheck, affects your perspective and your decision making ability. And that's why I am absolutely hopeful about the direction of this commission and the decisions that they'll make as they consider what are very thorny problems. You know, we heard from our colleagues across the healthcare community that you needed to have some expertise sitting at this table that comes from being employed by a hospital or by a payer. But in fact, this legislation took a much higher level view, and I believe in the long run will be more successful because of this tough choice.
When anything this big happens and is new, it takes a while to feel the impact. When will we see some of these initiatives, and when should we look to see the first impact, really?
It's a great question. Mm-hmm. And I will say that there is some thinking. We need some results as quickly as possible. There are expectations built within the Wellness Trust Fund that we'll see results within 3 years. That's when we will have to see the efficacy of some of the investments that are made. In people's individual health care, it really depends on how quickly their provider moves to this system of global payments. Again, we would expect to see different contexts, providers being paid for email conversations or phone conversations fairly quickly, actually.
Like right now? Like
there are some, yes, there are actually some patients who are under this current system and should be experiencing a global payment differently, the team approach to their care. The behavioral health improvements that we're excited about will take a little bit longer, but again, we're excited to have behavioral health be part of people's overall health moving forward as this law is implemented.
Well, it's rare that you see a healthcare advocate delighted, but here you are in the flesh.
I am very pleased and appreciate all the hard work that went into getting us to this point.
All right. Thank you so much, Amy Whitcomb Slimmer. We've been talking about healthcare in Massachusetts and about how this new legislation is going to impact containing costs. To read Amy Whitcomb Slimmer's piece in The Atlantic on healthcare costs, visit our website, wgbhnews.org. Thanks again.
My pleasure. Thank you, Kelly.
Emily Rooney's back here in Studio 3.
Hey, Kelly.
What do you have in store for us today?
Well, you hear that buckaroo music. Do you think you could tell the difference between grass and corn-fed beef?
Nope.
Nope, that was an incident. Well, what if you were blindfolded and was prepared by somebody who really, really knew what they were doing?
Maybe.
Well, we did just that yesterday along with our resident foodie, Corby Kummer. We'll find out whether I could tell the difference in a minute.
Can't wait to hear it. I'm Callie Crossley.
And I'm Emily Rooney. This is Boston Public Radio. It's a mighty good food. It's a great meal. Well, I really love you.
It's good for you. Eat a cow, it's a thing that goes.